Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host, I'm joined by my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing good today.
Wonderful.
Well, you might say I might be a part of the greater good.
Oh boy. Oh man. And we will learn much more about greater good and plenty of other cards that you can order from Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where any order you make over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save yourself 10% off your purchase. And orders over $100, you get that free shipping. And all of this will help contribute to future show giveaways. Oh, man. Greg, I finally did it. I tackled my pool. It is 100% in my control. It is in my clutches. I have cast my legendary enchantment.
Would you say you just, like, jumped into it with that tackle?
I kind of snuck in through the side, actually through the bottom.
Did you skulk into it?
There you go. I skulked into my pool's filtration system, fixed it 100%, and that thing is so blue. Oh, my gosh. I'm so happy. The homeowner in me is jumping for joy right now, all part of being a grown man, father, homeowner, magic player, all this good stuff. But anyway, we could talk more about that later. But, Greg, we have finally come to the end of our Dominaria story, the last chapter.
Oh, man, I'm glad we weren't ending the podcast.
No. Not yet, at least. We still have some time left, but... why don't we jump into Lore Corner?
All right, guys. So as you all know, last week, almost a week and a half ago, sorry for the lateness. Busy weekends happen around holidays, right? we left the Weatherlight being grasped by Yargle. And the crew of the Weatherlight not being able to fend off this 9-3 frog spirit.
No. In fact, it's long and sort of sinewy arms and fingers just clasping to this ship. And no matter what they throw at it, you've got, you know, Jaya shooting her fiery bolts, her focused fiery bolts at this thing. And it's not really doing too much. But... we rely on our fungal friend, Slimefoot, who communicates with the Thalids of last episode.
And spirits
beneath the surface of Urborg, and says, "Help, we're trying to fight this big thing. Can you help?"
Well, they say they're trying to fight Demon Lord Belzenlok, but this guy's stopping them from doing it. Can you guys help us?
There you go.
They're like, "No, we can't help you, but we know something that can." It's not really alive, but it's not really dead either.
Interesting. Greg, who do they summon?
I don't know yet. We cut away back to the Cabal Pit at this point, where Gideon's beating the crap out of all these clerics and captives, and they kind of build up this suspense with the Weatherlight. And all while this is happening, there's... Chandra is in the stands watching this go on, kind of trying not to be forced into the pit as other clerics are forcing other clerics into the pit, but she puts some people into the pit. And then
Gideon fighting knows that he cannot use his Aegis shield power lest he give himself and Chandra away. So continue.
Right. And then at a moment notice, another sword wielder, because he took a cultist sword, comes up behind him, defends him. He's like, "Oh my God, somebody's in here that's not being controlled by the dementia magic. This is great." And she's like, "Hey, can I join you guys?" And she's like, "Well, yeah, we're fighting in a phalanx here and just doing what we do. My name's Rada."
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, nonchalantly throwing that name around. And he's like, "I'm from the Weatherlight, and I'm Gideon." And they're like, there's no way you could be with the same weather light.
Yep.
Of course, anyhow.
Of course, Radha known from, what was that, Time Spiral? Or Future Sight.
Time Spiral.
One of those.
Time Spiral Block.
Planar Chaos, I think, was that symbol on her old card. But anyway, yeah, like you said, we blip back to the weather light, and they're battling with Yargle, and all of a sudden, from the Earth grows this immense elemental being just made of plants and rot and dead carcasses. And this thing is huge. I mean, it doesn't dwarf Yargle, but it definitely, you know, outgrows it considerably. So
yeah,
this is, of course, Muldrotha, the Gravetide. And Muldrotha wraps Yargle in its limbs and basically just pulls him back off of the Weatherlight and deals with him. So the Weatherlight is allowed to get away, and then it takes off towards the stronghold. As they were a ways away, they didn't want to give away their position, but now they are on hot footing it, or hot flying it, rather, to the stronghold.
Right. So then as they're going towards the stronghold, we go back to what's happening in the stronghold as bells and alarms start going off and all the cultists.
Bells and alarm
everybody
or
in
bells
theirs.
And lock? Sorry, I had to.
There's like, everybody, get out there. Defend the stronghold. And then Whisper, the blood liturgist, shows up and starts casting a spell, and a mist starts showing up in the pit. And at this point, Chandra looks at it as like, that's a poison mist. She's going to kill everybody in the pit. So Chandra breaks cover and starts throwing fireballs at Whisper. And
with incredible control and accuracy, thanks to her newfound training with Jaya Ballard.
Exactly. So as this is going on, she's like, oh, there's got to be a lever to allow them out of there. And sure enough, she finds one at the behind of one of the seats, opening up stairs up. And of course, the first person up the stairs wasn't Gideon. It was Radha.
Yep.
And then Gideon's like, this is Radha. She's a friend. And they're trying to fight off Whisper, and they're having a hard time because Whisper's throwing death spells at them, and Chandra's throwing fireballs. And then, just to give you an idea of the fireballs that are being thrown, look up the art for Exquisite Firecraft.
Exactly. Yep.
And it's exactly the type of fireballs that are being thrown.
Very precise, yeah.
At this point, Whisper gets the drop on them, and Gideon is there and goes with his shield and stops it. And then the Weatherlight was there.
Yep.
So the Weatherlight's outside of the stronghold, and Rod is like, wait, the Weatherlight's here? But it was destroyed, and then this happens, and then they talked about Teferi and Karn, and ultimately they're running out to the thing that you call in the center of an area, courtyard, to fight Belzenlok, knowing that he's out there. At this moment, we jump back to the Weatherlight that's still coming into the stronghold. And there's something dark coming from the stronghold. I mean, they can't really tell. As it gets closer, Raph points it and says, that's Ur-Goros. That Cabal minion was afraid of this thing, and Liliana kind of reaches out to it to try to control it, and she's like, I can't control it. It is not human.
That's right.
And then it comes close by to them, and you can see just how the head is warped, and there's no way this thing was ever human. So now they've got Ur-Goros up there. They're trying to get Ur-Goros out, and Gideon is down there fighting Belzenlok.
Finally engages Belzenlok, yeah.
And they're looking to Lawyer and is like, Liliana, asking her to help. And of course, they don't know.
Yeah, she's so...
They just don't know.
She's so weak from having controlled that entire army of Panther warriors. And, I mean, she's pretty spent. There's not too much else that she can do, so...
But after talking to them, they know that she needs to get to Belzenlok.
Right.
All
right.
And then the rest of the crew's like, we'll handle Ur-Goros. You go take care of Belzenlok.
Yep.
And they're like, okay. So she commands her army of the undead to build a bridge for her to walk down from the Weatherlight.
How very Liliana.
So just imagine a bunch of corpses from the Weatherlight to the ground.
Yep.
And we get back to Chandra, Gideon, and Rada, and they're like, we don't have the Blackblade. It's got to be near the pit, the treasury. It says it's down here. So they're going down there, and they're like, there's six doors. I didn't know there were six doors. It could be any of them. These things are picked. They're warded. They're spell locked. It'd take hours. And Chandra just kind of goes, boom. Hours, you say?
And then doesn't Gideon say?
And Gideon's like, oh, that works.
That works too. Yep. Burn it all. Oh, man. So they find the Black Blade and they return up to the courtyard. And then Gideon begins to battle Belzenlocke. And it's a very heated battle. They're almost locked in a sort of stalemate because Belzenlocke is incredibly strong. And, of course, Gideon with his invulnerability shield isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So there's some fighting. There's some scrapping. And Gideon loses hold of the Black Blade. And Belzenlocke gets it. And so he starts lunging after Gideon, and there's more fighting.
No, he doesn't get – Belzenlocke never picks up the Black
Blade. Oh, it just flies out
of
Gideon's
hand. It's left to the ground.
Hand.
He's just using that sword. Now, you got to remember that there's some spirits that are there protecting it, and also at this point, that's Liliana right. has shown up, and Liliana's taunting him, saying that that's not your sword.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't kill an elder dragon.
Yeah.
You're a liar. You're a king of false prophets and all these other things, and starts going off on the song that they sing about Belzenlocke being the hero of everything and the Dark Prince and blah, blah, blah. And she starts singing the exact opposite, provoking him. And he kind of gets off counter.
Oh, it's working.
Gideon has time to pick up the sword.
Yep.
So Gideon's going in for a swing. Belzenlocke recognizes that he's there.
Mm-hmm.
So he counters him, of course.
Of course.
Throwing him to the side. But Gideon was able to lodge the sword in his thigh.
Yep. And the blade starts to drain his essence. And Liliana's...
Well, a little bit. And then Liliana shows up.
Right.
Keeps jeering at him. Going into about how he took, Josu and everything, grabs the Black Blade's hilt and just
rams
uses
it.
Uses her ever power and just shoves it into him,
yep.
killing him, draining her a little bit, draining him completely. And at that moment, he's dead.
Yep. Belzenlocke has been vanquished. And I think, didn't it say that he was shrinking in size?
Oh, yeah.
As it was drawing the
and
life force out of him?
There's some odd things, too. So as this ends and this demon's dead, Liliana looks and she's like, why aren't my lines gone?
Yep.
I thought they would disappear. Well, Gideon asks if she's okay, and she's like, I'm magnificent.
So with Belzenlocke vanquished, they decide to continue about their mission, which involves going to meet Jace on Ravnica. So we have...
Well, not before they get Teferi to take the Oath of the Gatewatch.
That is true. As you saw in the Oath of Teferi card from Dominaria, he is now a member of the Avengers. I mean, the Gatewatch. Sorry.
Of course, they asked Jaya and Karn to join up, but Jaya's like, I'm not a joiner.
Yeah, Jaya's like, I'm not doing this.
And Karn's like, I've got other things I need to take care of before I can get to this.
There you go.
Yeah.
So now, one by one, the Planeswalkers start to walk away. Gideon walks away. Chandra walks away. And they all leave. And then Liliana, just feeling drained, she tries to walk away, but she can't. And she's all of a sudden getting this flurry of emotion, this worry. Did I lose my spark in that little skirmish with Belzenlocke? Like, what is going on? And then a dark shadow starts to form. And in walks the other Big Daddy himself, Nicol Bolas. And, of course, everyone else is gone. So it's just her and Nicol Bolas. And he explains to her, You thought you could get out of the contract by just killing your four demons. Well, your contract is now in default, and the one who drafted this contract, yours truly, now owns you. And Liliana just feels incredibly defeated, and she's thinking to herself, what if I fight back? And it's as if Nicol Bolas plucked that thought right out of her head and said, if you decide to fight me, I will engage your aging process and you will wither away and die immediately. And Liliana considers this for a moment, you know, not having to be a pawn in this anymore, but the thought of maybe, just maybe, there's a way, there's got to be a way out of this. She just sucks it up and says, all right, tell me what I got to do. And they then planeswalk away together. And then, Greg, we join our heroes on Ravnica.
So we get back to Ravnica where Jason, Ajani are, and as Teferi, Jaya, Karn, and Gideon all show up, Gideon's like, where's Liliana? I'm like, well, she should have been right behind us. Well, Jace is there now, and Jace is like, don't worry about her. She was just using you to kill the demons. There's no chance of her having any other reason. She's left. She's gone. Stop worrying about it. And Gideon's like, no, she's changed. She's a different person. And Jace is like, nah, I totally doubt that. She has never changed, even from the time I've been around her. She's always used me.
Salty.
Well, I still don't believe that she left us. So Gideon decides, well, I'm going to walk back and check. The rest of the guys start talking and conversing with Jason and Johnny. He planeswalks back to the courtyard. I mean, everything's the same. They were just there, except there's no Liliana.
Yep.
So he looks for the Aether Trails and sees that she did planeswalk away.
Yep. But not
but
to Ravnica.
But he can't tell where.
Yep.
Also, he doesn't see Nicol Bolas's Aether Trail.
Right. Right.
Interesting enough,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. Well, he must have known full well to disguise it however he can. And he's Nicol freak.
Must have.
He's Nicol freaking Bolas. He can do whatever he wants. So.
Almost. Yeah. Almost. And then at that moment, he's like, maybe she did. So he takes a black blade and goes back to Ravnica. Yes, that's right. You heard me correct. Gideon still has a black blade.
Yep. And that is the end of the Dominaria storyline. So let's take a moment here, Greg. I know we brought our listeners here through the Ixalan story, and now we're here in Dominaria.
Well, wait one moment. I got to add one thing. There was a bit of extra information in there that we hadn't gone over.
Sure.
And there was a conversation between Tiana and Joyra after the fight is done.
Yeah.
Joyra talks to Tiana, is like, well, I guess I've got to give you the Power Stone of Sarah's Realm so you can take that back to the Church of Sarah. Mm-hmm. And Tiana's like, why? The Cabal may have been rooted here, but it doesn't mean that they're rooted elsewhere. This could take years to take care of. And Joyra looks at her and says, you know, you're right. It could take years. And it's just kind of this funny thing where they're using this other event, essentially, to be able to use these still. Now, there's still thought of the fact that the Weatherlight may still planeswalk.
This is true. This is very true.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. So you were continuing. We've been through Ixalan. We've been through Dominaria.
Right. I just wanted to get your take on your thoughts on the story of Dominaria. I mean, we had 12 chapters, which is a huge amount back to back to back. But, yeah, what was your take? How do you feel the storyline of Dominaria went?
I was actually quite excited about it. It was an enjoyable story. It took a lot of turns that I didn't expect to happen. And for being such a legendary set, they really did get into a lot of the cards and the legendaries in the set. Sure, we didn't see the Thran Temporal Gateway or Traxos, but it still came across, and that was really cool.
I totally agree. I think that it was a great mix of the nostalgia factor. I mean, you had the introduction of all these historical greats throughout Magic's history, coupled...
Don't forget about the places.
The places, absolutely. I mean, we got to go back to the Talarian Academy, plus we got introduced to a whole bunch of new characters, all of whom I am big fans of, especially like Raph Capuchin, but... I mean,
with that loser,
it's great. I mean, there was a little bit of speculation, obviously, on the whole, is Jace still Mr. Emo? But that's a small sliver in the greater portion of the story. And I am just so satisfied about this whole Dominaria set. The storyline was great. You got to include Slimefoot and Yargle. And I think it's great, and I cannot wait to see what plans Nicol Bolas has for Liliana. So,
well, of course, the plans that Nicol Bolas has for Liliana is that of harnessing the chainmail and using her against the Gatewatch. I mean, what other thing is that going to be doing to them other than messing up Gideon forever?
Well, yeah, but she still has no idea about the planar bridge. Or she might know about the planar bridge, but she doesn't know about the Immortal Sun locking planeswalkers away. And so we'll see what happens. It's definitely going to be a rip-roaring time here in New...
Whoa. She does know about the Immortal Sun. Even though Jace was dismissive about her, he talked about it.
Yeah, briefly. Yeah, no, you're right. She might have heard that in passing, but... and then, of course, we have the two known Ravnican sets, plus the third. Greg, let's...
Unknown name.
Let's take a little moment here and just speculate on what the theme of that set will be, and maybe even, like, a name of it. Like, I'll just come out here and say... if Nicol Bolas' plan comes to fruition, which it seems to be doing quite nicely, I think that we're going to see him tear...
Well, it's going to be called Alcatraz.
Alcatraz. This just in. Nicol Bolas takes the Gatewatch to San Francisco, the last place they want to be. And they get trapped because they're enjoying themselves so much. So, no.
No, that's what Ravnica is going to become, Alcatraz, the impossible prison.
So, if he brings the Immortal Sun to Ravnica and traps the planeswalkers there, I mean, that's a heck of a place to trap them, you know? Because you've got...
I mean, it really is, but it leaves him with access to things like Zendikar and its pure mana.
That's true, and if you do...
Dominaria.
I mean, if you think about it, the title of the set was not released. I mean, you could even say Ravnican Turmoil or, you know, Battle at Ravnica or anything like that, but if the name would somehow allude to it being a prison, yeah, you wouldn't want to give that away so early, so... There might be some merits in that thought, you know, like given the circumstances, I think that.
Or it could be Guild Pact Fractured.
It could be.
Which could potentially mean Jace is dead.
Oh, man. And here we are thinking he's about to ascend to this brilliant higher form, you know.
I mean, what of? What if? I mean, we're only speculating here. Of course, with the lore, there's so much speculation. A lot of people are having the up-in-arms conversation about Jace being such a salty little...
little bleepity-bleep.
Words I can't say on this.
It's a family podcast.
And honestly, I think it's just him being him, and it's the writer kind of taking her take on it. I still think he's going to be that same Jace. He's going to be dismissive about anything that's Liliana, but he has this, his growth is solely with Vraska. Yep. He has no growth with Gideon. He has no growth with Chandra, Nyssa, Teferi, Karn, Ajani, Liliana. As a matter of fact, it's backward growth with Liliana. So all these things, I can definitely see him being cold to them until he learns more.
Sure, absolutely. And remember, he still has Vraska's memories locked away, and he has, you know, the trigger to bring them all back. So that's going to be a whole nother episode that will probably happen here on Ravnica. Maybe they'll have to wait till the third set to bring that all out. But, Oh.
They announced what's going to be in those Ravnica sets, the color combos, right?
Yes. Yeah, they have. It's a little different from where we were at with the Return to Ravnica set.
Because it's a 5-5,
right?
It's going
to be another 5-5, correct. And so that's why with the mystery shrouding the third set, is it going to be like a Dragon's Maze where you have all the multicolored guilds? I mean, we all know how that went down. Or is it going to be the guilds are gone and everything is monocolored and it's just chaos because it's been turned into a planeswalker prison? I mean, nobody knows. Oh, it's so exciting. Stay tuned for more.
Let me see
what happens.
Well, I got to take a look at the Guilds of Ravnica and the Ravnica and Allegiance. So it's just, I think the Golgari was going to be in the first set. So maybe there's a high chance we're going to see this happen in the story early on.
It could be. I mean, they're going to need Vraska's help when, you know, they get there, because she'll just be trying to kill him as soon as she sees him, you know? So
quite possibly, yeah.
But we'll just have to wait and see.
But then there's the question of how compromised she
is. Right. Well, if Jace has anything to say about it, he'll bring her back full swing. So anyway, let's move on here from Lore Corner. And this gives us a chance, next couple episodes, to dive into some of our older characters like we like to do in transition between our set block stories. So
So with that being said, I mean, like we've done before, is there any type of area in the lore you guys want us to delve
into? Absolutely. If you guys want us to give you histories or lore surrounding any particular character,
I mean, we'll dive into this and get the information. I mean, just putting it out there, Legends could be a really fun storyline to get into.
Yeah.
But there's still so many other storylines that we could talk about too, even with Dominaria and Ravnica. The Argos Cost storyline is really cool. That in Saw's deck.
Yeah, we will do the legwork for you, get up all that information and relay that to you, because we are about lore and news and brews.
I do want to remind you, if we go into Dominaria and you guys ask for Slynn Voda, there really is nothing on him right now. I mean, he didn't show up in lore. There's no books about him. All we know is he's a deity like Leviathan that the Merfolk.
Okay, well, hey. Don't give him too much, man. You know, this is just, you know, we'll get there when we get there.
We'll do what we can to give you some deep information on the characters.
Speaking of deep information, Greg, let's head on into our news segment here. Let's head into As Foretold. So this last week, you know, we are recording on a Monday here, so a little bit later than usual. But last week, we got an announcement that MTG Arena is very soon going to be allowing you to play best 2 out of 3 games and have a 15-card sideboard. Greg, what does this mean for people who are playing on MTG Arena?
Well, it means that you don't just die out to red deck wins.
That's for sure. Absolutely.
Because apparently there's a bunch of people that are on Arena that are just buying the tickets for the red deck wins deck, since there's nothing from Kaladesh currently there. And Kaladesh is what deals with the red deck win deck. Red deck wins so much better. I mean, Glorybringers kind of break the bank in this format right now. So there's not much you can do.
Well, doesn't this also open up the door to cheap removal and answers for decks that, because, you know, like you were saying before, with the one game, you had to kind of gear up to play anybody, and that's pretty impossible. So
correct.
What you can do,
it's hard. It's a challenging. I mean, I've played a bunch of it. That's why I prefer.
There you
go.
Yeah. So in this mode now, with the introduction of sideboarding, you'll be able to play your deck, but then pack your silver bullets in your sideboard to be able to handle that blue-white control deck or that red deck wins. It brings, because when you had the matchmaking issues where you're playing the top tier deck and you're just starting out, there really was no hope for you to win a match. Given the quality of cards. But now you can actually prepare yourself for that, and it gives you a much better chance. Now, of course, it does that for the higher tier decks as well, but it just seems like a little bit more fair and even playing field. I think this is going to be a huge jump forward in the scene of MTG Arena, and it's going to make a lot more people want to engage in playing this new format.
That's for sure.
So, all right, well, looking forward to that. Still looking forward to when they say that MTG Arena will be available on Mac so that I can jump on board. But
sorry, that laptop just can't handle
Arena.
That's
okay.
Yet.
It handles the podcasting, which is what really matters right now.
Well, that works.
Yeah. All right, so second on the docket, and very, very interesting and important here, is Pro Tour Dominaria. Pro Tour Dominaria happened this last weekend, and if you were fortunate enough to watch any of it, it was made up of a couple different formats. You had Booster Draft and Standard Play, then more Booster Draft and more Standard Play, and then the top eight was finished out with just Standard. So for those of you who might be unfamiliar with how a Pro Tour works, the total record of all formats put together will govern your standings and whether or not you progress to the next day. So if you just knock the Booster Draft out of the park and you go 3-0, and then you kind of slump out on the Standard and you go 0-3, well, or maybe it's more than that, I don't know. But the bottom line is,
four rounds.
Okay. So
like 8 rounds.
You pretty much
everything.
Better be killing it at Booster Draft and at Standard, which therein brings back what we were talking about with MTG Arena doing these draft leagues. That is very, very different than what you see at the Pro Tour level, where everyone knows what's being passed around the table, which is kind of how Magic was meant to be played. Now, obviously, it's not a convenience factor because they're all in the same room at the same table. But when you can take things into account like signals and knowing that you're going to hate draft and it's actually going to matter, that plays a huge part in drafting the highest levels of competitive Magic.
So
real quick, I just wanted to go over the metagame breakdown, just some highlights, and I'll go over most of the unique ones. The highest portion that we had at 14%+ of the field was red black aggro. I mean, we kind of knew that going in here. It was one of the most popular decks. But then you had various flavors of red, both mid-range and aggro. You had Steel Leaf Stompy, which is a green aggressive deck. You had some black green constrictor, white black Benalia, white blue Teferi. Here's one of my favorites, Esper Control, which we'll talk about later. Interesting.
The new boy to the group, blue green Karn.
Yep, blue green Karn. You have blue black mid range, mono black control, a couple more Esper decks, and then there's a white blue approach to make up the very end. So, interesting forms of red black decks, white blue decks, green and blue. So it's actually a pretty healthy mixture here. Very, very cool. But Greg, what did the top eight look like, and what took it all down?
Well, top eight was kind of interesting. We'll start from the bottom with black red mid range. There was an Esper Control deck, which you were in love with. Then black red aggro, a mono red aggro, three more black red aggros, and then the winner of it all, mono red aggro.
Wow.
So, a lot of red, not a lot of green up there. Just outside of top eight, there was green, the white-black Benalia deck, which is a tokens deck, and then another Esper Control. And then outside of that, black-green constrictor. But ultimately, black-red aggro being the dominant force here in these games. Now, do I think that's the deck you need to go out and play? Oh, gosh, no. It only took up 14% of the field. When that's a very small piece of the pie.
Yeah, and I made an outlandish statement, my bold statement on Twitter, I think it was on Friday, that I felt like Mox Amber would make a showing and someone would find a way to break it and its price would shoot back up north of $20. Well, Greg, that didn't happen. So I get to eat.
No, that did not happen. Matter of fact, Goblin Chain Whirler was the card shot.
And you can see, I was actually looking, perusing around Twitter, if you will, and there was a lot of people talking about how bad Chain Whirler is for the format and how it is just such a powerful card, and it just eliminates the ability to play a lot of one toughness creatures like Glintsleeve Siphoner or even Llanowar Elves. It just makes it really hard knowing that on turn three they could all get swept away by a three drop creature with first strike. It's just it's so powerful. But yeah, it's a Chain Whirler's world. And now it's just find the best Chain Whirler deck, at least for this Pro Tour. I think white-blue control is still very, very powerful. But you can see when it comes down to it, a lot of people want to play known commodities. And known commodities are aggressive decks involving red. So that was a pretty safe place to play. You know what? Let's take a bit deeper dive into some of these decks here and just talk a little bit about them in the Brewmaster's Lair.
Can I get a top off then?
Oh, we can top you off. We could even get you a free refill, buddy. So
with some new decks, everybody's playing things, right?
Everyone's playing things. There was cardboard hitting the table in full force.
It's covered in plastic, but sure.
Sure. Well, I am going to go ahead and jump in here. I was just super excited to see this Esper control deck. Unfortunately, it did lose out pretty quickly in the first round of Top 8, but we've had a white-blue control deck that's been very, very prevalent in Standard. But in this Esper control deck, it is taking the best parts of all these colors and mashing them together into an insanely powerful deck. He's running three The Scarab Gods, three Torrential Gear Hulks. Those are your only creatures. Then you've got three Cast Down, two Censor, one Commit to Memory, four Disallow, four Fatal Push, four Glimmer of Genius, three Syncopate, four Vraska's Contempt. Then you're running one Argyle's Bloodfast and two Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. Oh, hey, look, four Glintsleeve Siphoners in the sideboard, plus some more Counter Magic, some more Kill, some more three Duress, one Cast Down, Essence Scatter, four Negate. This deck is just everything that I've wanted. It threw the Scarab God into a white-blue control deck and then got to add things like Vraska's Contempt and Fatal Push. And I think and Argyle's Bloodfast, that's just card draw heaven right there. But in a world of mono-black and red-black aggro, cards like Censor and Fatal Push and Cast Down are just so incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
Other cards like Vraska's Contempt and bigger, beefier spells would definitely be akin to playing other control decks, as Vraska's Contempt does handle Planeswalkers. And the fact that this is running Torrential Gear Hulk means you can double up on your on all your instant spells, save Syncopate, which is an X counter spell. Very powerful, but you can't really run Torrential Gear Hulk with it. I love this deck. I definitely think I might want to build it. You know how sometimes in Pro Tours you get like, was it Shota Yasuoka is very famous for running that Grixis control deck that won, Pro Tour Kaladesh?
Yeah.
And then you don't see any more of it, you know, as Standard goes on. And it might just be a deck catered to beat up on the known meta. And then if you show up to any other tournaments, it's not going to perform as well as it did at the Pro Tour. So maybe it's one of those decks, but just being able to run the Scarab God alongside Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, makes me so excited. So
it's only a little good.
It's only a little. It only top aided, Pro Tour Dominaria. But hey, you know, that's not saying much. But anyway, Greg, what deck would you like to kind of dive into here?
Well, this white back black Benalia deck's really good looking, honestly. I mean, it's using your knights that you have available to you, Knight of Malice, Knight of Grace. Knight of Malice being stronger because having Hexproof from white.
Sure.
It just worked out really nicely. Pair of Angel of Sanctions, which is the one that's a Angel Oblivion ring. A Gideon of the Trials for Karns. As we know, Karn is a really strong card. Cast Downs, Doomfall, Fatal Push, Heart of Kieran, because that card is just strong. And then a 4 of History of Benalia, which if you don't know what that card does, it is a 3-drop.
Where have you been?
Saga that puts out 2/2/2 knights. And then they get +2/+1.
Right.
So, like, you play a History of Benalia, and then you play a History of Benalia, you're winning the game.
Yeah, especially if it's turn
it's
3
really,
and then turn 4.
It's really hard to get around, especially since they're tokens, and you're getting 2 from each of those. Most people just don't run enough removal.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
So this is just a really cute deck taking advantage of good plays.
And the prevalence of Heart of Kieran in this format almost calls into question the effectiveness of Cast Down, because that one, there's a lot of legendary creatures floating around this format. And looking at that card in your hand as your supposed removal spell, and, you know, you're staring in the face of a whole bunch of legendary creatures, it can be a dead card at times. So that's probably why you're not running 4 of's main deck. But obviously in other
formats.
That's
why Fatal Push is so much stronger, because when you crew up that Heart of Kieran, it is still a 2-drop.
You could just push that Heart of Kieran off the cliff and just watch it fall.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but in other formats like Modern and stuff, that Cast Down is definitely going to shine. Killing lots of Tarmogoyfs and Dark Confidants and all kinds of fun stuff.
Snapcasters,
sure.
3/2, Flying Dude.
Arcbound Ravagers that are all suited up.
No, the flyer thing. There's a deck around it. I can't remember the name of the card. Insectile.
Oh, Delver Observer. Secrets. The Insectile.
Thank
Aberration.
You.
Yeah. So, all right, and then the last deck I wanted to talk about here was this blue green Karn deck.
Yeah. Is so really cute.
This was put on by Channel Fireball, and then Luis Scott Vargas actually did a deck tech on the stream here about it, but they wanted to try to find the best Karn deck that they could find. And I found a lot of these inclusions here to be very interesting. To start off, it's Artifacts. He's running Metallic Rebuke. That's a counterspell I can really get behind when the meta is so aggressive with these red and black decks. It's also Glint Nest Crane. He's running a 4 of that with a 4 toughness flyer. That can block a lot of things while fetching you your artifacts that you need, like Walking Ballista. And this is a green deck, so expect to have a lot of mana. And with those Land of War Elves, those Walking Ballistas could probably get pretty darn huge. So, and of course, for Karn, Scion of Urza. It was very interesting. Also, Implement of Ferocity, along with the 4 Scrap Trawlers, will allow for a lot of artifact recursion, putting a lot of 1/1 counters on creatures. Like getting that Glint Nest Crane, even one counter, you'll be able to block a Heart of Kieran without worrying about it dying. So that's just a super value. And then Verdurous Gearhulk. 4 Verdurous Gearhulks will just pump your team just so insanely hard. Very interesting take. Didn't perform as well as they had hoped, but really, really, really nice to see a fresh take on a new deck at the Pro Tour on Magic's biggest stage. So that was really cool.
I agree completely.
Well, Greg, the last thing I wanted to talk about, or have you talk about, was you did the Battle Bond. I want to say they call it a preview event. They don't even call it pre-release. So you did.
They did not call it a pre-release. I did the preview event. Yeah,
you did the preview for Battle Bond. So why don't you tell us all about that?
I met up with my buddy Andrew. As you guys all know, we play 2 at a Giant often. And what ended up happening is we pulled our pool. We got a pair of partners. We got some other good cards. And we made a red-green deck and then a black-blue deck. Our white was completely just... There was nothing good there. We couldn't play it. It was that bad.
Ooh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. And it was harsh. So we go up against our round one opponent, and we get a pretty grindy game in there because Andrew's just not drawing any type of lands. But somehow I get there with warriors, just Phantom Warrior and that Mind Blade, the one that whenever a warrior deals combat damage to a player, you lose a life, you draw a card. I don't know how we pulled it out, but we did, and we were able to win. We probably should have lost, but we didn't.
Nice.
Game two, we played against longtime players here at the store, and our decks just did what they were supposed to do.
Well, that's always nice.
There was no chance for them. It was kind of sad for them. I felt bad. Because they're like, well, my deck's only giving me one color, and I'm not getting my big dudes. Okay. So our last match was the one that I had the most fun with. They're from friends out of town. And they had pretty darn good decks. I was a little afraid that we might lose, but... towards the end of the game, I got to do a switcheroo on an Ember Beast of ours and a Feral Hydra of theirs with 9/11 counters on it.
Ooh, that's pretty nice.
And then, you know, Korohelm guy giving it unblockable kind of wins you the game.
Yeah, that Feral Hydra would be an absolute all-star and two-headed giant as anybody can pay to put those extra counters on it. So if that's unblockable and you and your partner just dump all your resources into it, that's an easy...
We didn't even need to. We got in with two attacks. We just got there. I mean, almost all of our games went to the last 10 minutes, but we just won it out.
Nice.
We got a Gorm the Great and Virtus the Veiled. Which Gorm the Great is the 2/7 that has to be blocked and has to be blocked by two or more creatures. Now, that does have two separate clauses, so if they have one creature, it still blocks it.
Okay.
And then Virtus the Veiled, which is a 1/1 death touch that says whenever it deals combat damage to a player, half their life rounded up.
Ooh, that's painful.
We never got to use Virtus's ability.
Aww.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, so it sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, Two-Headed Giant is definitely a very entertaining format, and to have a set just based around it.
Well, one of the most interesting things about it, too, is the Two-Headed Giant, you got 6 packs between both you and your partner. So that is 3 packs each.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's you don't get your normal 12, so your power level is very high. It's really hard to make cuts, honestly.
Yeah.
But you just kind of get there and you make it work.
Nice. Nice.
And color fixing's interesting because if you're running color fixing, you have to be has to be playing green.
Yeah. Yeah.
No definitely. Question.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna have a bit of a shorter episode this week, but. We're going to go ahead and wrap things up. We have a lot of things in the pipeline for some future episodes here.
We do.
But, go ahead and, Greg, why don't you tell them where they can find you?
Before you can find me anywhere, you got to remember that we are sponsored by Flipside Gaming.
Oh, yes.
And that way, you know, you could go there, you could buy your product, you could buy your Battle Bond boxes, you can get your singles, you can get your information about anything in the TCG world, and you know, you put in our code and you get that extra 10%, and that goes towards future show giveaways.
That code, of course.
And remember, that code is go ahead.
The win condition is win condition in all caps. So nice job, Greg. Well done.
So you can find me on Twitter at noobslasher, NOOBSLASHER. 2003.
And you can find me on Twitter at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. You can check us out on Instagram at The Win Condition MTG. Hit us up on email, The Win Condition Podcast at gmail.com. And check us out on YouTube. There's a link down in the show notes. So, all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Of course. And thank you.
We will talk to y'all next week.
All right. Well, you mean later this week.
Later this week. There you go. Thank you.